What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for joining me here on episode 38 of the 90 Feet From Home Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We are presented by Underdog Fantasy, and I am your host, Joe Orico. You guys can check me out over on Twitter at JoeOrico99. That's where I share out all of my new work, whether it be these podcasts, any articles that I write, notes that go out directly onto Twitter. You guys can check all of that out at JoeOrico99. That's kind of the one-stop shop for all of my fantasy baseball work. Like I mentioned, we are brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. If you haven't used the site before, use my code Joe99, and your first deposit will get you a bonus of up to $250 in cash to go along with a special pick that you guys can claim. So make sure you guys are checking that out. Underdog is probably the fastest growing site in the fantasy space. Definitely be sure you're checking out some of their fantastic games. But today, we are going to be breaking down Thursday's slate, talking about the big things that stood out to me. Then we are going to be talking about some of the popular ads and drops before we get into a couple of the nicer weekend streamers. But first off, we have some kind of big news. It's not exactly breaking. It happened a couple hours ago. But you may have not heard that James Wood is going to be making his Major League debut on Monday for the Nationals against the Mets. Finally. Oh my God. Finally. He's making his debut. It's going to come at home. I believe this will be on July 1st on Canada Day. And James Wood, you know, we talked about this in the preseason. I thought that he was going to break camp with the team. His spring training was fantastic. The numbers he put up in the minors last year were pretty damn excellent. And now he's been that much better this season, quite a bit better this season than his already fantastic 2023. So he's cut his strikeout rate dramatically. Last year, if there was anything you can point at to say James Wood might not be ready yet, it was the 33.7% strikeout rate. And that was very high for AAA. And he'd been relatively high the last couple of seasons, 27, 28%. He's cut that all the way down to 18% this season. That is a fantastic strikeout rate at any level. And then you look at the walk rate. He's always been a guy who draws a lot of free passes. Last season, it was 10%. The year before, 14, 10, in that kind of range. And now he's all the way up to 17% on the walk rate. 10 home runs, 10 stolen bases. He's batting 346. It's a 168 WRC+. James Wood, I know it's been a tough year for prospects. It has been one failure after the other, essentially, in terms of these high-profile names. We're starting to see Wyatt Langford turn around a little bit, but he had a terrible start to the year. Jackson Holliday, we saw a few guys get called up, watching it in the American League East. A couple of the guys for the Orioles. We're seeing Hierstad kind of pick it up now, but he was called up earlier, sent down. The Blue Jays called up Barger. He was sent down again, called back up. Or Elvis Martinez, the PEDs. It's been a tough year for prospects, specifically on the hitting side. There's actually been some pretty good pitching prospects that have kind of panned out this year. The hitting side has been absolutely atrocious. So a guy like James Wood entering the player pool, I know that we're going to kind of be a little bit nervous, but I think this is a must-roster player in all formats. He can be an immediate five-category contributor. Maybe the batting average, like he's batting 346 in AAA. I don't think that he's going to be that good, but I think he's probably, I think he's probably going to be somewhere in the 250 to 260 range, giving you great power and speed. I'd like to see where the Nationals are going to slot him into that order, but I wouldn't expect them to put him in the bottom third. Like, this isn't a juggernaut offense. I think we're probably going to see him slot into the middle of that order. You're going to have good run and RBI opportunities. Like, there's a lot to really like here, and there's a chance it doesn't pan out. But you got to take the chance now, because if you don't, then you're never going to get the opportunity to. Earlier today, he was 25% rostered on Yahoo, and that was an hour ago when I checked, and he's up to 31% right now. So stop what you're doing. Go pick up James Wood. If you don't do it now, then you're probably never going to have the opportunity to. At this point, I think it's really going to be something where he goes quickly. We've been talking about this for, like I said, I wrote pieces in March about how I thought he should have made the team. Everybody's been waiting on this every single week. And now that he's finally here, we are going to see these ads come like crazy. It wouldn't surprise me at all if he's well over 50%, close to 60% before his debut on Monday. So make sure you're doing what you can, whether it's fab, whether it's a waiver pickup, do what you can to get James Wood on your roster and in your lineup for Monday. You never know what to expect, but this is the prospect who has the best chance to succeed the rest of the way in 2024. Maybe Wyatt Langford. It's pretty close, I guess. But in terms of widely available guys, Langford's rostered. James Wood is still out there. So I would be picking him up wherever you can. But let's start breaking down Thursday's slate. And let's start with Carlos Rodon. This one was pretty ugly. George Springer himself personally made this a very tough night for Rodon. a couple of three-run homers, both coming in the first two innings, and it ended up being 8 earned runs on 10 hits. Rodon did end up going 5 innings, so it did mitigate a little bit of the damage, but it's hard to look at this in a positive light. The 8 strikeouts were nice. 15.9% swinging strike rate is really nice. 31% CSW, sure. But overall, Carlos Rodon, and I've mentioned this a few times this year, I don't think there is a harder player to evaluate in all of baseball. I was very in on him in the preseason, and then later on in March, we started to hear some problems about the arm, and he wasn't getting up to velocity. And then my later drafts, I didn't really have many Rodon shares. I drafted a bunch of him in November, December, January, when he was going in the 160, 170, 180 type of range. Price got more expensive, and then the arm problem happened, and I was kind of out, and then he started the year off, and it was kind of okay, and then he looked really good for a while. He got the velocity back up there. There was a stretch between May 8th and June 10th where he did not allow more than 3 runs in any start, and it was only 3 runs once. Most of those starts were 1, 2, 0 earned runs, 6, 7, 9 strikeouts, and these last 3 against Boston, Atlanta, and Toronto, it's crazy, but we are looking at 20 earned runs allowed over those last 3 starts. It's gotten really bad. I don't think there is a harder pitcher to predict. Next time out, Rodon could give you easily 7 innings of 10 strikeout shutout ball, and nobody would be really surprised based on the yo-yo that he has been this season. But those advanced numbers started to catch up with him a little bit. He had been outrunning his XFIPs. He had been outrunning the Sierras of the world, not striking batters out the way that he once was, not even close. In his 2021-2022 peak, when Rodon was arguably the best pitcher in baseball for that 2-year span, we're looking at a 34% strikeout rate with about a 6.5-7% walk rate. The walks are still about in the same range, but we've gone down to a 22% strikeout rate. The swinging strike rate is also down quite a bit from those years, 15-14%. Now it's down at 12. So maybe he could get up to 23-24% strikeout rate, but I don't think that's really going to matter so much. I think that with Rodon, in shallow leagues at this point, you're probably teetering on the edge of a drop. I think it's in those very shallow leagues, you're probably cutting him. In those 10-teamers where, you know, we've talked about this pretty regularly on the show, there is just such strong pitching on like an ESPN 10-team league. I think that you would be all right to cut him. I don't think you're going to miss out on a monstrous second half from Carlos Rodon. I think in most cases, you're probably still holding out. There are some positive signs. The randomness of this season and of Rodon himself could very well mean that we get a nice 2-month stretch from him to end the season, and he ends up with a 3-something ERA, and then this little span doesn't really, you know, stand out so much. One thing that really does kind of stand out to me is his 121 stuff plus. It's not perfect. You can't always use stuff to just, you know, this guy has great stuff, so therefore he's going to be a great fantasy asset. He's 4th among qualified starting pitchers in terms of stuff. So I do think that the talent is still there, but he hasn't been able to put it together on a consistent basis. Like, there was a stretch where he was consistent, but that was immediately preceded by a couple of bad ones, and now it's been followed up by some bad starts. So overall, what we're looking at with Rodon through 17 starts is a 4.42 ERA and a 1.26 WHIP. I think that he is okay in those deeper leagues, but your expectations for him going forward should be roughly an average pitcher who might give you a great start here and there, probably will give you a couple of great starts, but you're also going to get a couple of absolute stinkers, and there's no real way to predict when it's going to come. Sitting him in tough matchups is probably the way to go about it for now, and in those really shallow leagues, I do think, as tough as it sounds, you're probably all right to cut him. If you're playing an 8 or a 10-team league, once you get into the 12-team territory, it becomes tougher because of lack of options, but I don't think that Carlos Rodon is like looking at a massive turnaround anytime soon. It's been terrible, and I think it will continue to be kind of a bit of a struggle, a bit of a roller coaster for him, and we probably see somewhere in the low 4s ERA, and you know, he's probably not hurting you in those deeper leagues, but I really don't think that he's that much of an asset anymore, specifically without the strikeouts. The main thing that he kind of has going for him is pitching for one of the best teams in baseball at this point. And even that comes with pitching in a park where it's not the greatest park to pitch in. And there are some struggles that are going to be associated with that as well. So I think with Rodon, it could be fine. But my gut tells me we've probably seen the best of him in 2024. And honestly, we've probably seen the best of Rodon's career at this point. I don't see a massive, massive turnaround coming at his age. I think, you know, he's going to be 32 later on this year. It's probably a situation where those 2 years were his peak and we're going to be kind of hoping that he gets back to it. But in all likelihood, we're probably never seeing that version of Carlos Rodon again. Let's talk about Chris Sale. Brilliant against the White Sox yesterday. He took a horrendous 1-0 loss. 7 innings, allowing just that one run, 11 strikeouts and one walk, a 30% CSW, and a 14.3% swinging strike rate. It's now at 2.79 ERA, 0.92 whip, and 118 strikeouts to just 17 walks. It has been just an incredible season. That's over 93 2/3. And I said it yesterday, and I kind of hesitated before saying it because I wasn't sure what the response is going to be. I don't want to I piss people off enough on Twitter. I don't need to go out of my way to draw more people's upset. But I said this might be the best version of him we've seen outside of that 2018 year where he was just brilliant. It's and you could make the argument. Like, there are a lot of great seasons to choose from when going through Chris Sale's history. If you just look statistically, actually, one of his better years, it's funny, was 2019 when he allowed a 4.40 ERA. He had a 35% strikeout rate, a 30% strikeout minus walk rate, and that was like a bad season for him. For his career, 30% strikeout rate, 25 strikeout minus walk. It's been brilliant. So to say that this year at age 35 is arguably a peak for him, I could see how that could be perceived as a bit of a hot take, but it's really, truly, if you just look at everything he's doing below the surface, 32% strikeout rate, 4% walk rate, 4.5% walk rate. But, I mean, the swinging strike is up to 15.1%. It's the highest it's been since 2018, the second highest mark of his career. He has 10 wins, pitching for a great team. There's nothing in the numbers to suggest, oh, he's gotten lucky with BABIP or home runs or anything. This is, like, if you're looking at the numbers, actually, maybe he's slightly unlucky because that 2.79 ERA is backed up by a 2.31 FIP, a 2.43 XFIP, and a 2.53 Sierra. I think that a Cy Young award is very, very possible for him. And just taking a look at the bets, the betting market on Bet365, Zach Wheeler is the favorite at plus 250, and then Glasnow at plus 350. Chris Sale at plus 450. I think that's a decent chance if he stays healthy, he ends up with the Cy Young. I don't know how much voters are going to read into this necessarily, but Chris Sale probably should have won a Cy Young somewhere with the White Sox or in 2018 with the Red Sox. There were several years where you could point to him as being Cy Young worthy. It's almost like Gerrit Cole. You're thinking, this guy doesn't have a Cy Young up until last year. You're thinking, how does he not have a Cy Young with the track record that he has? I think a Cy Young is putting Chris Sale in the Hall of Fame at this point, or very, very close to it. The numbers, excuse me, if you look at the numbers from a historical context, 130 wins is not close based on, you know, everybody else who's in the Hall of Fame. For the most part, 200. It used to be 300 wins was kind of the threshold. Now it's closer to 200. I don't think he's going to get there from a win standpoint, but we're looking at a guy who nearly has a sub-3 ERA for his entire career, which is close to 2,000 innings. If he's able to add a Cy Young to the pile, I think at that point there's not much of an argument that Chris Sale belongs. I already don't think there's much of an argument just based on talent, based on peak. He was one of the best pitchers of the 2010s, and if it wasn't for Kershaw, if it wasn't for Verlander, we're probably thinking of him as the best pitcher of that decade. He's in the top two or three names for sure. So I think a Cy Young goes a long way towards putting Chris Sale in the Hall of Fame. He's very easily a top five pitcher rest of season. If he stays healthy, there's a chance he's number one. It's crazy that we're here, but Chris Sale has been absolutely brilliant, and I can't imagine how tough that is, taking a loss against your old team when you go 7 innings of one-run ball. Offense let him down, but Chris Sale as a whole has just been so brilliant this season. Let's talk about Jack Flaherty. He finally turned in a bit of a poor outing yesterday. 5 2/3, 7 hits, 5 earned runs with 7 strikeouts and 1 walk, 28% CSW, and a 15.3% swinging strike rate. First time since April 24th, he allowed more than 3 earned runs in the start. It's been an incredible year for him, an incredible stretch. And I think that, you know, we have to kind of chalk this one up to his back not being 100%. He was supposed to start earlier in the week against the Phillies. He got pushed back, and initially we're pretty happy about that. Going from the Phillies to the Angels in terms of opponent, like, that is very solid on paper. Didn't work out for him, but I do think, you know, he's working through something. He still had a great knuckle curve. He still had 7 strikeouts, 15-plus percent swinging strike rate. Unless we get word that this is a lot more serious than we know about, I find it hard to be overly concerned. I mean, it is concerning to some extent, but for me, Jack Flaherty's still a top 10 starting pitcher. What he's done this year has been brilliant. The numbers below the surface are even better than what you're seeing on the surface, and those are already great. I wouldn't look at this as any reason to be overly worried or panicked unless we get a report that Jack Flaherty is going on the injured list. Jack Flaherty's back problem will cause him to miss the next week or two. Whatever that potential update could be, that would be when I would worry. As of right now, I'm not worried, but I don't think we need to read too much into it, especially considering how strong he still looked, despite the fact that he's dealing with the nagging issue. So I wouldn't be dumping him. I wouldn't be trying to trade him or anything like that. If you're really nervous, then you can get a nice haul for Jack Flaherty, but I don't think that it's something where you need to be worried about. All the season's done now. The end of Flaherty's value is here. I don't think we're there at all yet. But let's talk about John Gray. Incredibly inconsistent over the last couple of weeks. After being the face of consistency for like 2 months, last week I think it was 9 earned runs. Yesterday was 8 earnies. 5 innings, 9 hits, 8 earned runs with just 1 strikeout and 1 walk. 16% on the CSW. You guys hear me rhyme off swinging strike rates all the time. You don't usually hear me say the number 2.7%. He had 2 whiffs. Really, really atrocious stuff. His ERA on June 8th was 2.17. His ERA today is 3.77. That is just ridiculous to jump up that high after a couple starts. I think he's a safe drop in most leagues, and main reason isn't because of these blow-ups, because those do happen. It's nice when they happen and it's 4 earned runs and not 8. But the main reason I think that John Gray is kind of cooked right now is because he's not striking anybody out. That's the main issue here. You're looking back at the game log, and you'd think you're talking about like a reliever who's throwing 1 inning or 2 innings here or there. 1-3-2-3-4-4-3. Those are the strikeout totals over John Gray's last, 7 appearances? We're not seeing any strikeouts from him. The last time he had more than 5 was May 10th. It's crazy to even look at that. And I wrote it last night, but just reading it again is just almost hard to believe. For a guy that generally was a pretty decent strikeout arm, he wasn't blowing you away with 30-plus percent strikeout rates, but 24, 23, 24, 25%. He's still at 21% for the season, but a lot of that is the heavy lifting that some of these starts earlier on. There was 9, 7, 7, 7, 7. It was a good run of strikeouts for him earlier in the year. We have not seen that recently. I wonder if there is something nagging at his arm because he's also allowing a career-high barrel rate. You know, he's allowing a lot of hard contact, 9.8 barrel rate, 44% hard hit. That barrel rate, we've never seen a number higher from him. And in terms of the hard hit, that 44.4 is the highest going back to the COVID year. Before that, it's the highest ever, you know, not counting that short stretch in 2020. So this is essentially the worst we've ever seen John Gray look. The ERA estimators are not terrible, but I don't know that there's a massive turnaround coming for him at the same time. You know, he was really great for a stretch, but I think at this point he is nothing but a deep league streamer if you're pretty desperate at this point. I just don't think that we're holding out for that much. Maybe he's able to get the strikeouts back, but even if he does get them up a couple points and we're seeing, you know, a 25% strikeout rate, if he's still giving up that amount of hard contact, and it's honestly, he's gotten lucky in terms of the home runs he's allowed too, because with this amount, with this barrel rate, with this amount of hard contact, the launch angle's gone up a couple degrees. You'd figure he'd be allowing a lot more than 0.83 homers per 9, 7.4 home run per fly ball. He's been, for his career, 13.7 homer to fly ball, 1.14 homer to 9, with the caveat that he spent a lot of time in Colorado. But even in his Texas seasons, he's been 1.2, 1.26 homer per 9, 14, 13% homer to fly ball. I think there's a chance this actually ends up stabilizing as a pretty terrible season for John Gray. If those strikeouts don't come, and I don't think they are, maybe they are here and there, but consistently I don't think they are, I think that it's a pretty easy drop for him, unless you're talking about a really deep league that we mentioned here and there where there's just literally nothing on the waiver wire. If it's an AL-only deep league or if it's a 15-teamer, a lot of, even a 15-teamer, though, I think you can open that spot up for streaming or find a stash. You're picking up a Hunter Harvey or somebody waiting for a trade at the All-Star break or something. I just don't know that John Gray is really giving you a hell of a lot at this point, and I don't really expect that to change in the immediate future. Let's move on and talk about Cedric Mullins. He's been on an absolute tear recently. Over the last 14 days, he's batting .391, 18 for his last 46, 12 runs, 3 homers, 6 ribbies, and 3 stolen bases. I think he's coming out of that funk that we've seen him in for a lot of the year. His line as a whole, outside of that .223 batting average, is actually excellent. And I don't think a lot of people really realize it. He's been dropped in a ton of leagues, picked up a lot over the last week as he's heated up. But that .223 batting average, dreadful. But 38 runs, 9 homers, 28 ribbies, and 16 stolen bases in a great lineup, that's pretty damn good, especially considering he isn't playing every single day. He's been kind of in and out of the lineup. Now, I do think going forward, it'll be very hard for the Orioles to not play him just pretty much all the time. Against lefties, you're probably not going to see much out of him. But for the season, we're talking about a top 175 player, even with the horrendous start and the bad batting average and the lack of everyday playing time going back for like pretty much the whole season at this point. I don't know why people gave up. I understand, I guess, why people gave up, but cutting anybody of this caliber in the first couple months of the season, it almost always comes back to bite you. Sometimes it's one of those aha moments where you cut a guy and he actually ends up sucking the rest of the season and you feel really smart about it. But when you're cutting a guy who was a top 100 pick, even in the top 120 picks over the first, I don't know, 2.5, 3 months of the season, you spent the whole offseason evaluating them. We all did as a community. You settle on these ADPs. These guys are going at certain spots. Occasionally, there's a huge miss. But with a guy like Cedric Mullins, who has a history of fantasy success, it really did feel like people pulled the plug on him pretty early. The Orioles are an interesting team. They have a lot of up-and-coming stars, and there was a thought that maybe Mullins would lose his job entirely in favor of one of the young guys. I just don't see that happening, especially the way he's swinging the bat. If you're seeing him on any waiver wires, and there's a chance you are, because he's still 72% on Yahoo. When I looked a couple days ago, it was like 51 or 52%. You need to be picking him up wherever you can. I don't know that this is going to sustain forever. It probably isn't. It almost certainly isn't. But, you know, if you look again, most conservative projection on Fangraphs is probably ATC, maybe the bat. And those ones, either one, you're looking at 10 homers, 13 steals, or 9 homers, 17 steals. Both of them projecting about a .240 batting average while playing in a great lineup. I don't know why anybody wouldn't want to pick up Mullins if he's sitting out there. I understand that most deeper leagues, even 12-teamers, he probably wasn't dropped, but there are some of you listening to this right now that are just smiling ear to ear because somebody dropped Mullins, you picked him up, and if you'd got him over the last 2 weeks, you got the number 16 fantasy player for the last 2 weeks. Is he always going to be that good? No, but he is definitely somebody that's worth rostering in all formats at this point. So I made a bit of a boo-boo yesterday, just a little bit about how the sausage is made. The quick hits don't just come out immediately. I put them together throughout the evening, and sometimes I don't go back and check when I should check something. I wrote earlier in the evening yesterday, it looked like Carlos Correa fractured his wrist. Based on that pitch that he took flush on his arm, based on the reaction that he had, it looked pretty bad. And I wrote that it appeared that Carlos Correa suffered a serious injury. It looks like there's going to be more playing time opening up in the Minnesota infield. It looks like he dodged the bullet. Based on the x-rays, based on the reporting, it appears that they're calling this contusion, I believe. I believe the word they used was contusion. But there's no fracture, there's no break, there's no sprain, or any of those kind of scarier words. So it looks like he was actually able to escape with minimal damage. So I do apologize for that. I never want to put out false information. This was just a situation where the thread was 16 tweets long. The extended version yesterday in the Patreon was like 2,000 plus words, and I didn't proofread it as much as I should have. So apologies there. The real point of the note was to highlight how well Jose Miranda has been playing, and that I think that even though he's playing pretty regularly, there is still a chance where we see him get every single day playing time, and we're trending more towards that. He's only had one day off in the last week, and I do think it's a really nice time to pick up Miranda, regardless of what we're seeing with Carlos Correa. But Miranda slashing .295, .341, .495 with 26 runs, 8 homers, and 35 ribbies to go along with the steal. I think he's well worth an add in 12-plus team leagues. Third base has been pretty bad this season. Miranda is doing fantastic things. He's a top 60 player for the last 2 weeks. He was fantastic in 2022, really, really fell apart last year. But he has kind of put things back together again, and I think that's kind of just a free asset on the waiver wire. Somebody who's hitting close to .300, batting in the middle of the lineup a lot of the time. Recently, we've seen him batting fourth pretty consistently. Every game, it seems like you're getting at least a run or an RBI or something out of him. And like I said, top 60 production for the last 2 weeks, top 150 as a whole for the last month. So I think that you're looking at Miranda as somebody that should be picked up in all 12-plus team leagues. And if it's a deeper 10, I think you could pick him up there as well. Let's talk about Brian De La Cruz. I don't think I'll ever quit Brian De La Cruz. I've always been a pretty big fan. We haven't talked about him in a while on the show, but he was somebody I was pretty interested in coming into the season. He's kind of a guy, like we mentioned, boring players pretty regularly. The Ryan O'Hearns of the world usually come to mind when I talk about the boring players that tend to be cuts if you need a spot. There's a, you know, James Woods called up today. I need to cut somebody. Okay, it's Ryan O'Hearn. That's kind of been the way that it's worked so far for him. And I think Brian De La Cruz kind of falls into the same hole of he's been really good, but I don't think people really have recognized how good he's been. Close to a top 150 player for the season. And those run and RBI totals are really doing a lot of the heavy lifting here with the home runs as well. But 36 runs, 14 homers, and 39 ribbies with a steal and a .245 batting average. I don't know how the hell he has those type of numbers playing in that park with that team around him. But he's on pace for like a 70-plus run, 70 RBI season with 25. Maybe if he gets hot, he can get to 30 homers while giving you a .250, .260 batting average. This is a really nice asset, specifically if you're talking any format that's deeper than standard size. But even in a standard size league, you're getting pretty much a cross-category production here. You're not getting a lot of speed from him. But that batting average, again, just looking at the different projection systems on Fangraphs, he's at .245 right now. The most conservative rest of season projection is .258, with the loftiest one being .267. I think you're getting a really solid asset here if you're still seeing him on the wire. And I do hope, like I do hope with every Marlins player, that we see him get traded. They've talked about how they're going to be dealing a lot of pieces. I think they know that this is not, you know, a team, a roster, an organization that's currently built to succeed in the next couple of years. De La Cruz is 27 years old. There's a couple of years of control. He's a free agent after 2028. I think there's a chance we see him get moved. And if he does, him, Jesus Sanchez, are the guys I'm really hoping get traded. They have such nice power. They have really, like, especially Sanchez, but even De La Cruz, 11.1 barrel rate, 43% hard hit rate. If these guys are playing in even an average park with average teammates around him, we could see some really great stuff happen. So I think that De La Cruz is a lot more rosterable than Jesus Sanchez is. De La Cruz is playing every single day. He's batting in the top third of the order, where Sanchez is more of a platoon guy. I like both of them, but really Brian De La Cruz, I think he's pretty close to a must-roster player. I mean, maybe in those shallow leagues, you know, like I've mentioned, three outfield, 10-team leagues, it's really tough. But in pretty much every case, I would be picking up that production you're getting from De La Cruz. And even if he doesn't get traded, he's shown us that he can succeed even in a shitty ballpark with a shitty team around him. So definitely somebody to be keeping an eye on. And another guy to really be keeping an eye on is Jonathan India. We talked about him a couple days ago, and he had four consecutive multi-hit games up to that point. Well, now he's got six consecutive multi-hit games. He's raised his batting average for the season by about 40 points over the last couple of weeks. And overall, we're looking at a really good line now. .272 average, 37 runs, 5 homers, 32 ribbies, and 8 stolen bases. He's nearly a top 30 player over the last month. And it's also kind of notable to me that he's been moved up to the leadoff spot here starting on June 24th. Before that, he had been, I think he batted first a couple times before that, but generally he was 5, 6, 7, or 8 in the order. And now we've seen four consecutive games of him leading off. Really, really excellent stuff for his production. We've talked about him as a pickup for a little while, and it's kind of at the end of the line now. He's at 72% on Yahoo. Still probably some leagues you can get him, but he's been added in 18% of leagues over the last week, and just today we're looking at 2,800 ads across Yahoo. So he is definitely somebody, if you're seeing him out there, and again, we talked about how bad second base is, third base, those positions, if you're finding somebody like this out there, I would not hesitate to be picking him up. But let's move in and talk about the ads and drops, and then we'll get to some weekend streamers at the end of the show. Landon Knack for the Dodgers, he is going to be by far the most added player today. Well, Noelvi Marte is making it a little bit close, actually, but Landon Knack, we're looking at 13,000 ads plus already, and his start doesn't even take place another 7 hours. We're probably looking at 15,000 ads. He's up to 31%, and he is facing the Giants tonight in San Francisco. Yeah, if you're looking for a win, if you're looking for, you know, some decent strikeout numbers, I think that he's probably a really nice pickup. I'm not like, I don't know, I'm not overly sold on him just yet. He's got a 2.10 ERA through his first five starts, but it hasn't come with a ton of strikeouts. The command's been okay. He's really outperforming the ERA estimators. The hard hit's pretty high. So I'm not really sold on him rest of season, but as a streamer for tonight, I think Landon Knack is pretty solid in terms of the widely available guys. Good chance for a win if you get five innings, maybe five strikeouts. It's a decent opponent to face as well. So I think that Landon Knack is a really solid pickup for tonight, but not somebody that I'm looking at as a rest of season type of asset necessarily. We could get there, but I'm not quite there yet with Landon Knack. Tonight, I think he's a good pickup. Noelvi Marte, he's jumped all the way up to 41% on Yahoo. That'll happen in your debut for the season. He went 3-for-5, 3 runs with a ribby and a stolen base. I was a little nervous about, and I still am a little nervous about, what potential impact the PEDs had on him. You know, we heard Aurelvis Martinez the other day with a fertility story or whatever. Noelvi attributed it to something that he ate, but it was like anabolic steroids. This was not like, you're helping me through something here. I'm putting a little bit of cream on my elbow or something. Like, this was a serious drug that was in his system. So I was a little bit worried about what we're going to see. One game doesn't necessarily quell those fears. But I think if Marte is out there, again, the third base thing, the production across all five categories that you're potentially going to be getting, the summer at Great American Ballpark that we've talked about quite a bit this year, those guys who have kind of been lacking behind in power, specifically those Cincinnati bats, you're going to see things start to turn around a little bit across Major League Baseball, but specifically playing in that little sandbox of a park, you're going to see more power than you will from the average player. I think he's pretty much a must-roster player in all formats at this. Not even pretty much. Like, as much as I do have some skepticism about what he's going to look like in the long run, you got to pick him up now. With this kind of production potential, with that type of prospect pedigree, I think Marte is a pretty easy must-roster player as well. Since we've been talking over the podcast, I've been doing this for 32 minutes, 33 minutes now. James Wood has gone up another percentage point onto Yahoo, up to 33%. I think it's honestly just updating in real time at this point. If you want James Wood, you get him now. You get him, like, you pause the show or you listen to the show, you go in your app and you pick him up, because it's literally like he might be at 50% by the time today ends, honestly. I thought he'd be 50, 60 by Monday, but these ads are coming in hot. They are coming in very quickly, so go get yourself some James Wood while you still can. I think I'd prioritize him over Marte, honestly. It's very, very close, and I think it honestly maybe depends on your league, but Wood, I think, is a little bit more secure as a five-category asset, where with Marte, I do worry a little bit about what the power is going to look like, where with Wood, I don't have any worries about the power, about the speed. I think he can hit for a high batting average. It's pretty damn close, honestly. If you need a third baseman over an outfielder, outfielder over third baseman, I would just go based on the positional needs. I think it's slightly Wood by a hair, though, in a vacuum for me. Jameson Taillon, he struck out 10 batters in his last start against the Mets, 7 innings of 1-run ball. He's been pretty damn solid as a whole this season, 290 ERA, 127 whip, and yet I still just don't find myself that interested in adding him. He's not one of those players where you look at the numbers below the surface and they tell you, like, oh, he's a lot different than he used to be. He's 32 years old, first of all. You're probably not going to change too much at this point of your career. It happens here and there. But we know who Jameson Taillon is. Not a lot of strikeouts. He's able to get by because of pretty decent command. But this season, the thing that's kind of crazy about how he's actually had some more sustained success, 290 ERA and all that, he's striking out even fewer batters than he used to, and he was already pretty damn low. He's a 21% strikeout rate guy for the career. Last couple seasons, 23, 20, 21. He's down at 18% on the strikeout rate. You look at the swinging strike, and yeah, it makes sense. He's been at 9.9, 9.6 the last 2 years. He's down at 8.4. It doesn't sound like a lot, but that's probably equivalent to 2 or 3 points off your strikeout rate, and that's exactly what we're seeing from Taillon, down exactly 3 points on his strikeout rate. He's really overperforming his ERA estimators, 429 xFIP, 383 FIP, and his Sierra sits at 431. Against a tough team like Milwaukee, I think this is a situational one where if you're in head-to-head and you need the volume to keep up, I don't have a problem with it. I think a lot of the time it's kind of scary, though, even with how he's performed. It's not like you're looking at that sterling of a reputation here, even with the solid season under his belt, that you can say, all right, Jameson Taillon, I'm probably getting 6 shutout innings. If you were to get that, that's like a best-case scenario. I think you're probably getting 5 innings, 3 runs, 4 strikeouts or something like that. It's not really anything to write home about. So I don't know that he's somebody that I'd be targeting necessarily. I think if you are in need of a streamer, you need a chance at a win, you need to kind of keep up volume-wise, then he's fine. But he's not somebody I'm really going out of my way to pick up either. Colin Ray is also among the popular ads. He's on the other side of that matchup tonight against Jameson Taillon. Another guy who has done pretty well this season, But I don't think he's really that great of a pitcher. I think he's really just outperformed his ERA estimators, and he's getting by on that really low BABIP at 254. You want to talk about a bad strikeout rate? Colin Reyes is 15.6. I don't have the league leaderboard up in front of me, but that's got to be among the worst. To go along with his 6.9 swinging strike rate, there's really not a lot here, especially for somebody who has okay command, but not great. Like, he's about a 7.5, 8% walk rate, which is fine. But when you're striking out 15% of batters, I better see like a 1% or 2% walk rate for you to be that viable. 3.62 ERA does not tell you really the whole story. You look at the xERA, it's 5.34. 4.67 xFIP, you're looking at a 4.78 Sierra. This is going to get bad. There's going to be the regression start, and you could argue it maybe happened last week against San Diego where he allowed 5 earned runs, but it's going to just keep getting worse, I would imagine, or plateaus somewhere in that range where he's a 4 or 5 earned run guy pretty much every time out. Lots of ads today, nearly 6,000 on Yahoo. I think this is really playing with fire. You want to talk about playing with fire? Jose Quintana is another one who fits this. Like, you can pretty much take the exact commentary I've just given you on the last two guys and apply it to Jose Quintana. But it's almost even crazier to pick him up because even though he's had a couple of good starts, his season as a whole has been pretty terrible. 4.58 ERA. And the ERA estimators are literally right there, 4.57 Sierra, 4.53 xFIP. He's getting what he deserves. A 4.58 ERA is right where he should be. 17% strikeout rate. He's facing the Astros. This is a recipe for disaster. Maybe it turns out well for you, but that would be one where the results just happen to work and the process was bad. If you're picking up Quintana and he goes, maybe he goes 6 shutout innings tonight, gets a win, strikes out 7, and you're listening and you're thinking, God damn, Joe's stupid. Why would he tell me not to pick up Quintana? He was great tonight. The process cannot tell you to pick up these guys who have a couple of good starts, especially against a team like Chicago, who's they're not the greatest offensively. The San Diego one is impressive. 6 innings, 1 run ball, 6 Ks, but you can't be looking at any guy who has 1 impressive start or even 2 impressive starts, especially when the track record and the underlying numbers are so bad, and say, I'm starting him in a tough matchup here. I just think it's really, really asking for trouble to pick up Jose Quintana today. Drew Thorpe is also a popular ad. He's going to be starting tonight against the Rockies. I think it's fine. I don't have much interest, really, outside of deep leagues. It's very nice that he got pushed from the Braves to now starting against the Rockies away from Coors. That's about as big of a blessing as you can get as a starting pitcher. But I think, honestly, the upside is still kind of limited until I see more command. Like, his start against the Tigers was better, but he also walked 4 batters still. I think that it was a step in the right direction. But again, he's kind of like, if I need some volume, I'll pick up Drew Thorpe. If I'm in a deeper league and there's nobody else out there, I'll pick him up. But in shallow leagues, I don't really think that he's that necessary. Mitchell Parker, also a popular ad today. Still just 38% rostered. He's facing Tampa, which has not been exactly the toughest matchup this season. I think Mitchell Parker is a really solid 12-team arm, and in a matchup like this against Tampa, I wouldn't have any problem deploying him. I don't know why he's still just 38%, but he's somebody that I think should be added in a lot more cases. Byron Buxton, this one is kind of interesting. He's been pretty good for the last couple weeks, and I got a couple questions about him. So I did a very long write-up breaking down his entire season and his entire player profile yesterday on Patreon. There's usually like 1 or 2 players that I go longer on in the notes, and yesterday one of them was Byron Buxton because I hadn't really dug too deep on him this season. We've talked about him once or twice, but essentially the walks are gone. He doesn't walk anymore. He was never massive walk guy outside of the last two seasons. Generally was a 4 to 6% guy. He's back in that range now at 4%. Only 7 home runs in 61 games, and we've seen his max exit velocity go down, his average exit velocity go down, barrel rate. Hard hits actually right in that same range, but he's not getting the power results that he should be based on the guy that we know he has been for his entire career. He hasn't run a single-digit barrel rate since 2019, and I don't know exactly what to make of him, but I don't think that we're ever going to see that old Byron Buxton come back, the guy who's hitting for a great batting average, the guy who has 25-plus stolen bases. I think that at this point of his career, on the wrong side of 30, you're hoping that he's able to stay healthy and eke out neutral value from where you drafted him. But rest of season, I think that maybe you get another 7-8 home runs. Maybe he gets 10. You're maybe getting a couple of stolen bases. I know he's been stealing a little bit more recently, but I don't think he's ever going to be a guy who's going to run again just because he knows the risks that are associated with it. He doesn't play games. He doesn't play more than 80-some-odd games. If you look at his track record, he's played more than 100 games one time. I don't really see him stealing bases a couple times a week and now just suddenly getting that back. He has 5 this season on 7 attempts. Maybe we see him get to double digits, but that's probably about it. And he's also batting .261 with a .338 batting average on balls in play. He's generally, for his career, been about a .300 BABIP, .240 batting average guy. Probably what you're going to see down the stretch, if not a little bit worse, because the quality of contact has degraded a little bit. Not hitting the ball as hard is definitely not good for your long-term prospects, especially when that's happening at only 30 years old. If you're seeing him out there and you want to pick him up because, you know, we know that there is a track record to some extent, a lot of talent still in there, and you're seeing a good run from him, I get wanting to pick him up. I just think it's not really actually going to come to fruition in any real way. I think that maybe you're able to sneak out, you know, because he's on a bit of a streak right now, and whatever anybody tells you, I do believe that there are such things as hot streaks. You just see random players go on these tears for a couple of weeks, and whatever you want to attribute it to, there are hot streaks. And I think that Buxton is on one right now. If you're able to get in at the end and get maybe a week or so of good production, then that's totally solid. But if you're expecting Byron Buxton to be old Byron Buxton, I think you're probably going to be pretty disappointed. Moving into the drops, there's nothing really that crazy here. Usually we'll look at them and I'll say, no, this guy shouldn't be dropped, that guy shouldn't be dropped. Miles Michaelis is at the top of the drops, and I think it's a shame that anybody even picked him up. I don't know why what we're doing here. Unless you're talking like excruciatingly deep leagues, Miles Michaelis is pretty much a never pick up, never use type of guy. Spencer Turnbull, this one was pretty ugly last night. They put him on the IL. 6 to 8 weeks he's expected to be out with a lat strain. Damn the Phillies for doing this. This is completely on the Phillies, and I saw Nick Pollock say the same thing yesterday. This whole bullshit with Taijuan Walker, they took Spencer's Turnbull out of the rotation when he was doing amazing things for them to give a place to Taijuan Walker, and they worked him down into a reliever, worked him back up, and now they caused an injury. Shame on the Phillies. It's an absolutely terrible decision. It sucks that this happened to Spencer Turnbull, but he's out 8 weeks. It's already essentially July, so maybe he comes back in September. We know that they were messing around with him anyway. He's unfortunately a drop in all formats. David Festa, bit of a rough debut for him yesterday. I think that he's an okay arm. Again, another guy that I wrote up in a lot of depth yesterday on the Patreon side. If you guys want to check that out, check out the link in the description. I think he's okay. I think he's all right. But in those shallow formats, I don't think that you need to work through these bumps that he's going to have. Inevitably, like most guys have as he adjusts to the big leagues. We didn't see a lot of whiffs. He got 0 whiffs on his fastball. I just don't know that he's a guy you need to be running out of your way to pick up. Will it get better? Probably. Is he worth it in shallow formats? Probably not. Jordan Montgomery, another stinker yesterday against the Twins. He allowed 8 runs, but only 4 of them were earned. 9 hits, 1 walk over 2 2/3, and he struck out 1. We're looking at a 6.03 ERA and a 1.66 whip. If you're in a shallow format, I don't see any reason to hold on to Jomo. If you're in a 15-teamer, again, there's not much else out there, and there is some track record with Montgomery, and you can tell yourself things like it was a slow start to the year. He didn't sign till late. He'll eventually be fine, but, I mean, we're talking about 65 innings at this point. It's not like he's had 1 or 2 bad starts. We're talking about double-digit starts now. I just don't think we're holding out for so much here with Jomo, especially in those shallow leagues. John Gray, popular drop today as well, absolutely. After what we've seen these last couple of weeks, it's totally justified. Javier Assad, this one is the coup de grace for him. Right forearm strain placed on the IL yesterday. He's dropped down 16%. He'd already been trending in the wrong direction the last 30 days. It was a 5.04 ERA and a 1.56 whip. He had a great run to start the year, and I'm very grateful that I drafted him in 2 leagues and I was able to get some production out of that. But he's been on the bench for a while, and this Sunday, he is a very clear drop for me in that league, unfortunately. It was a great run, and he was a drop anyway. Like, he was already a drop, but now it's just there's no, like, oh, maybe he's able to keep outrunning these numbers. Now it's a forearm strain, and we usually know how that works with forearm strain. So, yeah, he's a pretty clear drop for me. Andrew Abbott, 6 walks yesterday. I was really hoping after that Boston start that he was going to be able to keep up those strikeouts. I wrote at the time that his fastball against Boston last week was just brilliant, and it was probably just an anomaly because it's not something we've really seen on a consistent basis this year. And then yesterday, it was a pretty ugly start for him. Only allowed 2 earned runs, but 6 walks with 2 strikeouts is pretty ugly business for you. I think especially we've talked a lot about how Great American Ballpark is going to be such a nice hitter environment over the summer months. Rostering a guy like Andrew Abbott is really playing with fire, especially somebody who's not getting strikeouts, somebody who has really outperformed his ERA estimators. The 3.41 ERA, it should be a lot closer to 4, if not well above 4, and I think that it's just going to get worse as the weather heats up. That park is incredibly tough, even for great, great pitchers. We've seen Lodolo and Green and Luis Castillo and a lot of great pitchers over the last few years really struggle at Great American Ballpark, and I think with somebody where you're talking about with Andrew Abbott, the pedigree is not there to that same extent where you need to hold through the struggles and hope that he's able to figure it out. We're entering crunch time. We're not quite there yet, but, you know, we're at the point of the season where you can't be saying, I'm going to give him a few weeks to figure it out. Those few weeks to figure it out could very well, not just with Abbott, but with anybody, those few weeks could cost you a season, could cost you a couple head-to-head weeks, could cost you significant roto standings points. So I don't think there's any need to hope that Abbott can figure out the strikeouts and hope that he can avoid what has plagued a lot of Cincinnati pitchers over the years and visiting pitchers at Great American, which is the long ball. And I don't know that he's going to be somebody who's able to avoid that. Elliot Ramos is getting dropped all over the place. I saw somebody post today online that he was I think he was the lowest OPS over the last week or 10 days in all of baseball. This was inevitably going to happen, right? He was running like these ridiculous barrel rates, ridiculous homer to fly ball. He had a 400 some odd BABIP. It was never going to last. I hope you're able to sell high. We were hammering the sell high on Elliot Ramos, because even though there's a chance he's like, I don't think he's this bad. I think he can be an okay, serviceable dude, but the value peaked. His value absolutely peaked there when he hit 10 home runs over the span of, like, I don't know what it was, 20 days, 20, 25 days. He hit 10 home runs. And then he went up to like 80% rostered. People were ranking him a top 25 outfielder rest of the season. And that's where you're like, you kind of have to take a pause and say, he's never going to be more valuable than he is right now. At this point in shallow formats, I have no problem dropping him. If you're in a 10-team league, 3 outfielders, it was nice to kind of get in on some of that production if you did. But I don't think we're going to be seeing a hell of a lot more going forward. It's a pretty safe drop for me in those 10-teamers. If you're talking deeper leagues, again, there is still some potential here. I think he can hit the ball fairly hard still, but it's not a great park. It's not a great lineup. It would really have to be deeper leagues only for me. If 10s and 12-team players, I think he's a pretty safe drop at this point. Let's get into some of the more preferable weekend streamers. And this one really makes me nervous, and I honestly don't even really want to say it, but I think Cal Quantrill is an all right option in deeper leagues. He's facing the White Sox. It's away from Coors Field. He has been fairly solid this season as a whole, and I'm not reading a lot into it in the long run. Don't get me wrong here at all. I don't think Cal Quantrill is anywhere close to a must-roster player, somebody that's worth speculating on, or any of that jazz. But against the White Sox tonight, if you are playing in a deep league and he's out there, you need some volume, I think you could do a little bit worse. I'm not saying that he's somebody I expect a lot out of, but the matchup is right, and he has been fairly solid this season as a whole. Tobias Myers is also somebody I think could be an interesting streamer tonight. He is facing those Cubs, and he's been really, really excellent for quite a while now. Another guy where I'm not totally sold the rest of season, but when you're seeing a nice run and he's coming up against a pretty easy opponent in the Cubs, I think Tobias Myers is somebody that you can actually start in some of those more shallow leagues. If you're talking about a 12-teamer, maybe even a 10-teamer, I don't have any real problem with starting him at all. Jake Irvin, we're starting to get to the point where he's not as available, but 60% rostered. I think you're still seeing him out there in some leagues. He's been fantastic this season. 3.13 ERA, 1.09 whip, 81 strikeouts in 92 innings. And aside from how good he's been, Tampa is just not a great offense. They're 23rd in runs per game, 27th in slugging, 23rd in OPS, and 27th in home runs per game. There are certain stats where they're a little bit better. They're a pretty fast team. They're 5th in stolen bases, but in terms of like a scary offense, Tampa is not a scary offense to me at this point anymore. Reese Olson is also somebody who I think is a decent enough ad for tonight. Probably better than just decent enough, actually, especially against the Angels. A couple of bad starts in a row there against Boston, Milwaukee, and Washington. Led to a lot of drops, but he followed that up with 6 shutout against the Braves, and then his last time out was 6 1/3, 2 earned run ball where he got a victory against the White Sox. Overall, 3.35 ERA, 1.19 whip, and the matchup is really nice for him against the Angels. So I'm definitely on board with a stream of Reese Olson there. And then the last one we're going to highlight, and it's somebody I've highlighted quite a lot this season, and we're probably running out of time to add him, but honestly, based on the roster rates, maybe you're not. It's Taj Bradley. I've become a complete broken record here with Taj Bradley, but he is a must-roster player in all formats. I don't want to hear about the home run problems or anything like that. He is a must-roster player in all formats. We have talked about him ad nauseum on the show. If you go and search Taj Bradley in the show titles here or on my Twitter, you'll see everything I have to say about him because I've said it so much. I don't want to become super repetitive. The dude is a stud in the making. He's been on an incredible run, and he gets a matchup at home against the Nationals. There's not much more I can ask for here. If you need strikeouts, you need win opportunity, you need a well-rounded starting pitcher, he's beyond just a streamer. I think that like he's functioning in that role because of where his roster rate is at 55%. But I see Taj Bradley as an absolute must-roster player, and I would be picking him up ahead of that Sunday start against the Nationals. I think he's in for a very nice start and a very nice second half of the year as well. But that will do it. That will wrap it up for us, guys. Just a reminder, there is not going to be notes for me coming out tonight. I said it yesterday on the show, but if you missed it, going to the Jays game tonight with my dad, going to spend some time together, hopefully have a few beers, and hopefully we don't see so much heartache as I'm expecting at the Rogers Center. The Blue Jays had a good game yesterday, which probably means we're in for a bit of a rough one tonight, but it still should be a lot of fun. Make sure you guys are following me over on Twitter. We're going to get back to those notes. So I usually do take some time off on the weekend anyway, but I have a built-in excuse because I'm going to be spending some time with my dad tonight. But follow me over on Twitter, JoeOrico99. Make sure you guys are subscribing to the podcast, doing all that great stuff to help us grow. The algorithm really does need your help with likes, subscriptions, ratings and reviews, and all that great stuff. Looking for more work from me, you can check out the link in the description of the episode for my Patreon. There's daily fantasy baseball content over there. We're doing quick hit notes, the extended versions, of course, over there. Whenever you see the regular versions on Twitter, there's an extended version for subs. There's also a starting pitcher guide every day, updated rankings. We're doing daily Q&As as well. So lots of great stuff. If you're looking for more fantasy baseball content or want to support me directly, you get to do both by subscribing over at the 90 Feet From Home Patreon. But I will leave you guys there. I hope everybody has a great weekend, and we'll be back again on Monday. Got some fun guests coming up next week and a lot of great stuff. But until then, everybody, take care. Have a great weekend.